Hi, I'm Michael Senoff, founder and CEO of HardToFindSeminars.com. For the last 5 years, I've interviewed the world's best business and marketing minds. Along the way, I've created a successful publishing business all from home from my two-car garage. Now my challenge is to build the world's largest free resource for online downloadable MP3 audio business interviews. I knew I needed a site that contained strategies, solutions, and inside angles to help you live better, to save and make more money, to stay healthier, and to get more out of life. I've learned a lot in the last 5 years, and today I'm going to show you the skills you need to survive.
You can read all the Napoleon Hill you want, but if you don't find, identified, focused on that reference group and learn everything they offer, and you excel and you conquer, dominate, and then the best performer in it, there is no success. People don't realize it. Oh, why didn't you call me Mr. X from the beginning?
Okay, we'll call you Mr. X.
And then the specific name we just leave out. What is the subject?
You've been in business a very long time, a lot longer than I have. And I love talking to people because I like learning. And I know you've got a lot more experience than I have in business. And if I can pick your brain and ask you questions or lead you in different directions to where you can teach me something, I'm ahead of the game. Tell us, what is your passion? When you started in business, how old were you, and did you know you were going to be in business as a young kid? What's your passion? What brought you to where you are right now?
I've been trained in corporate world, working for other people up to 35.
35 years old?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I graduated from university in the East Coast. And then, as a result of that, get to know about American business extensively. Somehow the university I went to, University of Maryland in the East Coast, that one you can delete, turned me on to the startup in Silicon Valley. Then I put them all together and starting my own company. Now, the reason I'm doing repeatedly, I've set up about 7 corporations so far, is because one more time, if I have failed all the way, that's one thing. Since I have succeeded with some, and I look for one more time opportunity. Now, when I see the 10-cent stock I sold turn out to be $39.75 per share, it's exhilaration, accomplishment. A lot of people get affected by that positively. That gave me more energy. And I see a lot of people that join me, not just the money, a lot of opportunities they get. Things they couldn't do, they did through the teamwork that pulled together the organization development, where people can really hone on their own technical background, management background, and then be the president of the company that I hire. And they go to the society and then to the industry, and they say something, they listen to him. And I see disciples turning into a monstrous successful guy, and I love watching it. I'm telling myself, so I like to see someone else do it. That's the passion.
What you've accomplished, you want to share that with others and help them do it too.
Yes, because when they do it, I learn something new too, that humbled me too.
So could you give a description of what is it you do? What area of expertise are you an expert at?
Mainly involving a telecommunication and wireless telecommunication, and then biochemical or biology and chemistry combined, and it's health and wellness, but it goes into extensively all area associated with that. The total target market that I'm after is about $32 billion per annum in the U.S. alone. That's only biochemistry area, and the telecommunication is just wide open.
Do you have that kind of background, or do you think it's necessary for someone to start a company like what you're doing to have that expertise as a background, or can you find the expert as a business entrepreneur? What skill does someone need to put a company like that together?
They don't really have to be an engineer at all. They should be trained in a structured manner, whether it's a university or self-taught, to look for signs of ingredients for people to watch. For instance, if they want to do the design of a certain product, he should be able to go after trade publications, professional journals, all kinds of stuff at his fingertips. And they need about 4 to 5 years of continuous digging into. And he can equip himself with what's going on in industry. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to learn what's going on in the industry after 5 years of relentless study of that.
So you have to be familiar with your industry so you can talk the language and understand the marketplace and be able to identify new markets and needs.
To say yes to it, I need to sort of qualify it by saying that for anyone to succeed with any introduction of service or product, they should deliver or design, whether it's a conceptual service or actual product, based upon their knowledge of consumer or users and customers and the knowledge of marketplace. Both of them combined together is one set of circumstances that should buttress and vouch for your efforts to deliver any product or services. And then as a result of that, he should also look for price to cost performance, value that it delivers. Value is nothing but a constructive facade. People feel there is a value to it because for the same dollar, the consumer gets a better solution and better bet for each dollar. What is that? What is called?
Bang for the buck.
Bang for the buck. Without that, there is no reason to deliver the service or product.
So you have to look at the end user first before you build the company.
And user and the marketplace. And then 5-6 years of knowledge about the market and equipped with what he or she studied, the technology or reasons for that service to succeed, the guy has to equip himself, herself with those things. Otherwise, without the knowledge, it is not good. Now, when I start, or anything I start, I look for the product and service that will be popular 5 years later or 10 years later. The only thing that I forgive for not having that kind of insight into 5-10 years is when I need to deliver the product now, keep the pot boiling, that project, waiting 5 years, I still have to sell the product and then bring in the profits, the cash and all that, and I forgive myself by delivering only 2 or 3 feature better than others that marginality products and services for immediate sales of all those products and services. Because the market is not ready to accommodate the 5 years ahead, 10 years ahead. That's the only time I forgive myself. But in doing so, the marginal product to deliver must have a good profit margin. The margin is defined as gross profit margin. Sales minus cost of goods sold give us profit margin. That is the strength measure for observing growth-oriented operating expenses waiting for 5 years, you know, fighting the battle to get ready and get our feet wet and ready to tackle on big guys 5 years later, got to start now with a couple of marginal products. But without that kind of value measure in terms of cost or performance to cost ratio, high gross margin for each sale, the marginality of features that I deliver, although it's not breakthrough technology, but it's not platform technology at all. A platform is between the derivative and the breakthrough. Now there's a long discussion on that, but that we cannot get into. But yet, unless the guy knows the marketplace, and know what customer wants now, and 5 years later, or 10 years, 5-10 years is a projection. The guy gotta have some sort of business acumen that he can project. Although it is incorrect about the 5-year, 10-year projection, but he has to have projection even if it is incorrect.
Would that go back to setting goals or a business plan?
Yes.
Because with no direction, you're just not gonna go anywhere.
Any plan is modifiable based upon changes in the marketplace. Therefore, even incorrect, there has to be plan.
What else is critical?
Most important thing is the guy has to be dumb enough to continue on, even if he fails, pick up and continue on again and again and again and again, until he knows that he failed and failed. But yet every time he fails, he learns something, and next time he may not.
Are we talking about you?
Yes.
Can you tell some of those experiences?
Years ago, I had the best idea in the world, and was $3,000 per unit, I delivered at $8.95 per unit, which the people cannot even say on the computer.
Wait, let's back up. $3,000 a unit was what you were going to sell it for?
That's my competition price. And I deliver that at about less than $1,000.
And still with enough profit.
Right. And I deliver the first $500,000 worth of product, and everything crashed.
What happened?
I just simply picked up and ran again.
What failed?
Everything I checked about the technology failed. Everybody said it didn't have that kind of flaw, but it did have. Power supply died and the product didn't function. But I did study the features of competition, and I had 99% of features in our product that really didn't work, but I knew what I needed. So I could quickly reorganize and fix it, ran out of money, and ran out and raised the funds again. And in the end, we raised $6 million cumulatively. And I have $70 million a year sale. And George Bush Sr. visited my company when he came to Silicon Valley. He did it in May. It failed. But I didn't stop, though. That's the difference.
Right after that project, did you have another failure?
Yes, I did.
Let's talk about it.
Well, when I started, I knew I could start it with $15 million, so I got $4 million. Supposed to have $15 million, and after then I was supposed to have cumulatively $30 million. I didn't get it. Whole market, the fiber optics and all that collapsing. Now, for me to go out and raise another $18 million, it isn't that hard at all. But I stopped right there. I knew it was collapsing, not me, the whole industry. Why should I be affected because of that? And have more people lose money? No, I stopped it. Then I failed because of that. And I knew I had to fail because it was expected to fail. Well, why dig deep when I knew it was going to fail? The industry, right? The fiber optic facility glut, and it caused so many companies to close their doors. And I didn't think I was the only one going to survive in the middle of that fiasco. So it was induced. But it was indirectly induced, sort of collapse of the corporation. That's okay. I learned a great lesson.
And what was the big lesson you learned?
When to quit.
When to quit.
And then organization behavior, organization development. I need to define better the difference and distinction among research and development versus product development. Better than ever before, because sometimes in telecommunications the distinction is quite blurred. So that's what I learned. Now, I don't think I made a mistake in that area at all, but since I had to spend $5 million for ground station, the distinction sort of blurred. But in the future, if I ever do it again, I started already, redoing it now. And I already have extensive satellite technology developed and moving right back into it. This time I'm not even opening up the store yet. Or store in a way, what I mean by that is hire a lot of people and have a lot of big real estate, meaning the offices and all that, and have a monthly payment of $400,000 or $500,000. I'm not doing that right now. I don't want to do it that way because of dot-com collapse can be another opportunity to look at the same business from different angle, meaning I reconstructed that business and completely deconstructed in view of the dot-com collapse. Now I have reconstructed it.
So are you operating a large business right now?
Mm-hmm.
So what's a typical day for you like? Do you have offices that you go to during the day?
Yes, I do.
Do you work long hours?
Yes, but I'm cutting down. I'm in pursuit of now converting team I have that are all working on a telecommute basis into a self-managing team, meaning they are directing themselves, the projects and all that, so I don't have to watch over their shoulder or check on them all the time at all. I encourage them, give and take the new subjects and the information, and I guide them, but stay out of their sight.
Do you do all the hiring of your management team?
Yes, I do.
What advice could you give to small or large business in hiring a good management team, and what to look for in some of the mistakes that you have maybe made in bringing in wrong management? What's important about a management team?
That's a big order. It's very difficult. Never hire someone who ever worked as a policeman, CIA, FBI, or a Navy SEAL, or any intelligence operation.
Why?
They have negative view of positive business aspects. Convert the positive into negative. And also, they have everyone fight against each other. I have learned a great lesson. And the negotiation to hire executive should be at least few months, never too quickly. You can do all the background investigations, and those guys who want to make the employer the greatest sucker in the world, set them all up. All the references perfectly check out.
So you have to really, really check these guys out.
Face to face. More important than document checkup.
You go to their home?
No. I meet them, do a lot of things together, and then give them some sort of test. Not sort of test that you can see, but discussion. The most difficult thing is, what would you do given the situation we have? That discussion should really proceed. It's very important. And the guy said, I can do it, not enough. Oh, you want to hire a guy? Cheap? Yeah, you don't need to do that. But anybody who wants to succeed with executives is going to really step in your own shoes in a different functionality, or call it vertical specialization, whatever it may be. They call it vertical specialization or horizontal specialization. Those areas, marketing or sales or engineering or management, whatever it may be, they are really stepping in your shoe and sort of representing your vision and ambition transformed into their mind and body. They're going to do something for you, and then you have to really convert them into someone who is going to really take that passion, the ambition, as he does. What we call in industry oneness between the goal of the corporation is the same as the individual implementing it. Until that happens, that guy not going to do it, right? That sort of person needs a constant maintenance. Suppose you made a real good choice, and the guy working with you on the project, he turned out to be worst jackass in the world, and you made a total blunder hiring him. Not to panic. You need to replace him, but don't turn him off and say terminate him in a way that he would affect others in the company. Doesn't mean that you call the security guard and escort him off at all. Perhaps really maintain trust, but verify what Reagan said. Never expect that guy is going to do it unless you have a checks and balance, not intrusive way, but you have to check all the time and to maintain his team work with you. Maintain.
And how do you maintain that? Do you have daily reports, weekly reports, meetings, phone conversations? How do you manage that management?
In the past, we relied upon documents, monthly reports, and then the operation review and all that. They don't work anymore.
Why?
The market is moving so fast. So sit with the jackass and then try to look into his brain and whether or not he's focusing on the project or the company. It's too late. They really have to be looking at his capability, whether or not he can even move the team and manage it, and then dig into the market, dig into the customer's requirements, and then he has to have cross-functional management capability. Any marketing guy who doesn't know how to work with the rest of the corporation, he should be out of the company. So now here's another blur, hazy area. We used to have sales separate from marketing, separated from engineering, separate from the CFO. It is not separated that much anymore. So looking into his brain, heart, which is called the maintenance of the team, that's what the president of the company or founder has to do now. Not the sobriety test every month looking at the documents. That's too late.
How do you keep this passion? Is the bottom line money?
No. No. There has to be a contribution that he believes in, such as contribution to certain cause of the mankind. No, this is based upon a righteous, clean, principle-oriented corporation that run in a way really respecting everyone in the company, and the money should not be the focus for those guys. Paying the money the way he wants actually disservice to his passion and ambition. But if you could find out what he really want to do. Now, lousy son of a bitch doesn't have it, right? But good guy who really wants to make money, he is not enslaved to the money, but consider money as a good slave that can work for you.
An enhancement to his passion.
Right. But he's going to go after a contribution that he can make. Be the product. Be the number one in the world because he did the best. I mean, everybody in the industry looked to him for answers and all that. He put his name on the map and all that because others didn't do it ahead of time, right? That kind of guy, money does not matter. That's why we give him more money, not energizing him with the money, and he want more money and more money, and we cut it off. But he and I agree on the value and contribution that we can make to the society, the industry that we are going after. Then he's going to perform better than anyone who's after money all the time, because they're enslaved to the money.
It's the contribution for the end user, but also, most importantly, is the recognition he will gain from his achievements and the recognition from his peers and his co-workers and the industry as a whole.
I mean, I handle, let's say, 3 million, 5 million, or 10 million every time, every month I have in the pocket, right? But I don't even need that money. All I need is a breakfast, a pancake, and a couple of strips of
yeah, a good breakfast, and you're happy.
And then lunch and dinner. I mean, that's only $7-$8 dinner. I mean, I'm cheapskate too, right? And all that millions of dollars, I don't even need. And that doesn't turn me on. And I find guys with that kind of ambition too, a similar ambition. You see, the problem is they do not think through from cradle to success. Every time they do anything, and I walk away from it and look at it again and say, hey, there are a lot more than I have done here or thought about. So I start fresh again. And I go through every conceivable thing about that subject. And then make sure that nothing is left out or, you know, any rock unturned, no. And then once I finish it, put it down on the desk, I say, I'm done with this. It's got everything in it. And until it's done, I don't rest. And I can't sleep until it's finished, at least. Thinking of putting all together, right? Every ingredient, everything that it has to have in order to call it a semi-final finish, whatever maybe. And I finish it. Even unfinished has a finish. Because I allow the definition of finish with the unfinished as defined, and then finished, unfinished, I have finished in my concept, right? That is finished. People don't think like that. Have you ever heard of any guy saying, I have finished section along with the unfinished section defined as unfinished, therefore it's finished in my judgment?
No, I've never heard anyone say that.
Never heard of it. That's how much I have to think. And a guy walk in and say, you know something, I got a great idea. Tell me about it. He left out the unfinished area, right? He didn't finish it. And then he failed. So,
yeah.
It's a never-ending process. But now I'm training others. Let them even make a mistake, too. I say, hey, make a mistake. Let me help you. But you better make your mistake. I'm telling the team to make mistakes. Not fatal mistakes, though.
So you do consulting for people?
When they need help, yes.
You told me you came across my website. You were looking for copywriting.
Right.
Okay. Before we get into that, tell me what led you to that. There must be something in your business career or business life that was missing, and you felt like maybe it was the communication through your writing that could help your business in some way. Tell me what led you onto that path.
Management courses in graduate school do not teach actual copywriting. It taught me what to look for, not in detail of the copywriting. I need to apply the marketing management theory and practice to copywriting. I know all the ingredients, though. That's why when I read what you sent me, I knew what they were, but I put them all together in one place. It was a checklist from you.
Right.
When I got the file. That was very important. But here's why. Creativity comes with going off tangent many times. Creativity without checklist, we lose and miss a lot. Because I'll be so creative for the sake of creativity, and I miss out a lot of ingredients. Those ingredients left out is going to kill that creative work and its opportunity. So what I'm going to do is, you know the security fence? How high? I mean, if it is higher than others, it costs you more money. When you start corporation and company, you want to increase the security fence against people stealing technology from you, somebody suing you, the probability of litigation, all of those things. If you have too high the fence, it's going to cost too much compared with the rest of the competition and industry. Their height is about, let's say, 5 feet. Don't go beyond 5 feet. If I have to look for those security aspects of the operation, in terms of checking what's missing and all that, that time spent is too costly. So I go after the checklist because I'm too busy. I'm too busy with other things besides copywriting. So how do I maintain the height of the fence as high as others or higher than others, but lower than others, but it has more ingredients and efficiency and effectiveness? So I beat the competition again is go back to the list and check off against it. And then at least I've done my homework. When it comes to it, it is not perfect, the checklist, but at least I cover the ground. And then when I read my competition, I'm going to check that against it and say, are they meeting it? If they are not, are they modifying it? Then I have to know that. Without the checklist, you don't even know what competition is doing.
When you study your competition, and we talk about copywriting, and we talk about the words written that communicate the product or service to the consumer, the portion of dollars spent on advertising and marketing, which is a tremendous amount, I'm sure. When you look at those words and how they affect the end user who makes a decision whether they're going to buy that product or not, do you see how you could come out over the competition through the use of these words in a big way?
I see that. Because consumers want very unique stuff. Now, be it security or, I'm not talking about security fence, is it secure for me to buy this product? Is this company listed on BBB, or they're going to run away with my money after they swipe the credit card? Those kind of concerns have to be eliminated. Now, what you're going to talk about is not that at all. Well, assuming that everybody qualified and satisfied the maintenance level of features, like credit card, SSL, SLL, whatever, the security, whatever, and then the third-party testimonial says, sort of they're accredited, whatever it may be, okay? All those things are met, like a credit card system company is reputable, trustworthy. I can sue them and get the money back if I fly-by-night online company walk away from it all. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about features that get the consumer hooked on.
And we call those reasons why.
Reason why, they have to create the urgency, and they don't. You're not going to make it unless you get this product.
You're saying your competition doesn't create that urgency?
They don't. That's where people are going to make money, by creating urgency for purchasing the product. Now they can justify and justify and justify. Too much justification stinks. Smell bad. And then, whatever they said, they fool the consumer, because you put them all together, they're lying. But they don't know they're lying. They got all these websites, they're lying to themselves. They should avoid those things. I mean, for instance, I don't mind if I talk about this one. While you have a great opportunity, if you review these opportunities, give an example of what is, whatever this and that, it ain't that at all. It doesn't say so. But the variation of interpretation and assertion and claims made on that particular document, you know, the way it is written and all that, totally false statement. But the guy selling it is going to pump and dump all the time. How do we defend ourselves against those guys doing it to me? Because even me, mesmerized talking to those guys. And I almost buy those things, and I walk away and walk back and say, this is wrong. So I didn't buy it.
What are we talking about?
I'm talking about V3.
V3?
V3.
What's V3?
Oh, you know that 264 or 318 pages ebook?
Oh, okay. No, I'm not familiar with that.
No, I have it here.
That's okay. All right, so you saw an information product that you were interested in. The sales letter made you all kinds of promises, but when you got the product, it was bullshit.
Yes, because you don't have to look too much. They're going to really analyze before they buy.
No, you can sense it. You have a sense whether it's a come-on or whether it's hype. You just can feel it. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, even with all kinds of ability to take sobriety test and then pass it and then surpass the Machiavellian manipulation by others, it is easy to get mesmerized. So they got to really think twice. I mean, especially online store people who is trying to come up with his own online store, they should find a permanent partnership with a guy like you who would deliver honestly. Okay, I'll look for these things and I'll give it to you. It would be much better. Because if they shop around and shop around all the time, they're going to run into all kinds of opportunities. And then they wonder what the heck happening. Every minute there's a millionaire made, right? That's what they claim, right? There is no millionaire made every day at all. And those kind of hype, people should walk away from. You know, e-commerce and online store takes tremendous effort. And if they think they can turn it on and then turn on the money spigot in 1 month or 3 months or one day, they're telling themselves a damn lie. Because it takes a lot of failures, honing on and honing in before they really hit the jackpot.
There's no free lunch, is there?
There is no free lunch. They better be now paying for the books and all the guidance and then really practice it. They can give... Oh, people really hire consultants to come up with a website. The guy's now enslaved to that webmaster. Because whenever you want to change it, how are you going to change it? You should be able to type it, and at least change the paper, the web pages, and add to it, too.
You really are. That was one of my most frustrating things. I didn't take the time to learn how to do it. Finally, I've taken the time to learn front page, how to create a website, how to do the copy, how to put it up there, to have total control. When you're enslaved like that, you don't want to keep spending money when you want to make changes, and you have a poorer product.
When I saw your Dan Kennedy, what is it, Albert or whatever?
The Dan Kennedy file that I sent you?
Yeah. And then there's another one, Albert or Ralph, whatever.
I sent you several of them.
They were excellent. Even me, with all the training in industry, the checklist that you gave me, because I had to read 300 pages, every bit of them, meant a lot to me. What I did is I summarized them into the very simple list, the checklist. And then go over it again and again. When I walk around, I have that in mind. Without that, just read, I understand. That's very foolish thought. Even what you understand, to internalize and then put that in practice, that's when you really succeed with that segment. Then you can give somebody else the job to do it for you. Otherwise, you're getting enslaved to that guy again. There is no money that you put after the guy is going to make you succeed at all. Because that guy can manipulate against you.
It all comes down to you. You know, one of the visions I have for this site, and as we talk about, a business plan is always changing. At first, this site started out as a portal for me to buy and resell used marketing material. It really started out as a passion for marketing. And you read my story. I got into selling on eBay, and one thing led to another. But I think the vision now is, I would like to create a tremendous source for people who want to learn, who have the passion, and who want to learn what it's really like in business. Not what the professors teach you at school, but like this interview with you that a college freshman can listen to about what it's going to take for him to succeed and what it's really like, an honest interpretation of real-world experience of what it's like in business, what you need to succeed, how you need to think, what sacrifices you're going to make, and I want to have this available for free to anyone who wants it. And this interview here is, you're going to be just one of maybe 1,000. You know, if I can do a couple every day, over time, it adds up. And I think it will be tremendously beneficial to anyone who wants to access this information.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. Business success is not something that can come around just because somebody tried. It needs a lot of luck. It needs a lot of success and failure all combined together. And in the end, it is not success, like money and all that, that's going to keep you happy at all. It is really something you deliver to society that people use it. I get on the airplane, I see the people use the telephone that I have installed on airplane too. So the money I made was so much, about $8-9 million just from that. It didn't matter at all. It is what I saw, and people, when I go to hotels and trade shows and offices and corporations, I can see them using my product, and it's beautiful product, and every corner of the product I gave my heart and body and soul to make it better than others, and really wouldn't quit on them in the middle of the operation. I see those products. I don't care who says what. I am really proud of those products people using. That's when the satisfaction comes. When I die, I can carry nothing with me. Even when they didn't give me the clothes, I was told you have no pocket.
It's true.
So I see what I've done. I also see what I can do now. Because I'm still looking for one more revolutionary product that is a breakthrough, not the bleeding edge, but it's a leading edge product I want to deliver to the market. And that takes lots of passion, agony, and ecstasy, which is very short compared with the long agony.
What would you tell a man who maybe has worked for someone his whole life, or what would you tell a guy who's thinking about retiring?
There is no retirement with lily in his mouth in a little coffin. There is no retirement like that. If he could step into a coffin and get all the lily in the world and he retire, there is no retirement. The only retirement is enjoying by creating something. That's the retirement. He plays golf all the time. You can only spend 4 hours a day, every day. And you can't play any more golf. You can't do it. So creating something that people can enjoy and benefit from is the best. To do that, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, it'll teach you only one thing, that is, every second should be spent on something that'll bring you one step closer to your goal, the ambition. Unless we live with that, we're not worth it. Eating and having sex and making money alone, there is no end to it. Growing and creating something, and then seeing people getting job out of your efforts, and you see them creating family, send children to school because he worked his ass off in the company, got better salary, better whatever maybe, and he worked so hard, he made it better than others. I saw a couple of guys out of the last couple of ventures, over $1 million or so. I mean, they're so happy. That gave me all kind of enjoyment.
Who have been your biggest influences in your business career? Or, you know, you speak of Napoleon Hill positively. Has he influenced you? And what other teachers have you been influenced, either here in the U.S. or from where you're from?
One of the most important things that I have learned is to look for reference group. If you want to be a lawyer, when you wake up, you've got to go to where lawyers are or hang around. If you want to be a businessman, there is a segment, industry, market segment and specialization, all that. Go to them. Live, sleep, wine, and dine in there, not anywhere else. If you want to go to school, don't get your eyes off the ball. If you want to sleep, sleep near school. If you want to quit because you want to have to make money and go back to school, get the house and walk the campus every day. Don't ever walk away from school. What I'm saying is, until the guy really masters, why the guys that succeeded in that have to learn not to walk away from them, but to live with them, dine with them, breathe in their air until you master and succeed just like them. And then you can find ways to do better than they have. It is different from model. A little different from model. Oh, this guy succeeded. He made money, this and that. A little different from that. Look at the guy who succeeded last year up to this year is already outdated now. There's a new model, new changes required to excel and to transcend last year's success is to really learn a very deep, in-depth, the secret of success coming from reference group. Very serious matter. You can read all the Napoleon Hill you want, but if you don't find, identified, focused on that reference group and learn everything they offer, and you excel, and you conquer, dominate, and then the best performer in it, there is no success. People don't realize it. Reading greatest guys' past history, yes, you can be inspired by that. But in the absence of latest secrets of success, modified by the ever dynamically changing marketplace, is totally different. So now, did I answer your question?
Yes, that was very good.
Well, thanks.
One more question, since we're going to wrap it up. In business and in being, quote, successful, whatever one's definition is, there's always a trade-off, and that trade-off is time. And there's sometimes, in some people's lives, a trade-off with time between business and work and family. And sometimes there's a dark side to that. And many people end in divorce because they were workaholics or because they were going after their passion so much. What advice from any of your experience, if you can share, could you give to somebody about how to balance that time between your career or your passion for work or success and your family?
Two concepts. One is partial response. The other concept is total response. When you want to achieve something, you should give total response. Partial response is going to give you a chance to lose the opportunity. To bring up a business, you may have to burn everything you got from both ends of it, the candle, for about 5 years. If you don't succeed within 3 years, you got problems. If you don't start seeing cash flow within 6 months, there is a problem.
Okay.
There is no success without monthly, short-term resources maintainable from the operation. Which means that reaching too high in the absence of short-term maintenance success is a mistake. Young generation must now learn how to focus. If you can sell, you've got to do the marketing and sales, even to your wife who marries you. honey, I want your ass here by 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock. Otherwise, I'm walking away from you. You got the wrong crowd. You can do a great marketing, and that lady is going to say, 5 years, I'm going to forget you. You better do what you can. I can keep family going, and I'll see you, support you any way I can. And 5 years later, you better make it. Otherwise, you didn't do it right. You need to have a marriage, even centering around the business itself, too. Because any husband who can get respect from wife and is succeeding, and she doesn't care about success, you got the wrong wife. What I'm saying is, to succeed is to give totality, total response to it. Complete. Mind, body, soul, bone marrow, flesh, everything we got, it should be given to the startup. Oh, you take time off, yes. But you never walk away from that business, even weekend. You may have your body with your wife, but your mind should still be with the business. The number of hours you're going to have to negotiate with your wife, honey, you want 5 hours every night? I got only 2 hours or 1 hour with you. You got to negotiate with her. But that will extend only 3 years and 5 years. I think it is a negotiated total response. Otherwise, oh, I'm going to maintain my hours with my wife. I want to make her happy. And let's still want a business. He is not making sense. Even the 24 hours is not enough. Even 30 hours is not enough a day.
No, that totally makes sense. Well, Mr. X, I want to thank you for taking this time. And I really appreciate you giving your advice. I can tell you've done a great job, really, in sharing some of your beliefs and passions, and I think it's going to really affect somebody. Who knows who, but hopefully this talk will influence maybe a young mind to be a great business leader, and I appreciate you giving back.
Well, I wish I could be of help, because the society is built because of people's contributions. Mine is very little. I learn humility every day, and I laugh at myself every day.
Yeah, you have to, don't you?
Yes. And I say, oh, you foolish head too, myself.
Once I get this edited down, I'll post it up on the site just for your eyes only, for you to review it, and only with your permission will I release it to any of the listeners.
Well, if there's any corrections to be made on improvement, and I'll help you with that too.
Sure. Maybe later on down the road we can do another talk, and we can add it right under part two.
Okay, sure.
Okay, take care. Thanks so much.